is brought to you by Head Start Basketball.
Hey, Hoopheads, I wanted to take a minute to shout out our partners and friends at Dr. Dish Basketball. Their Dr. Dish shooting machines are undoubtedly the most advanced and user-friendly machines on the market. Learn more at drdishbasketball.com and follow their incredible content at Dr. Dish B-Ball on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. Mention the Hoopheads podcast and save an extra $300 on the Dr. Dish Rebel, All-Star, and CT models. Visit drdishbasketball.com for details. That's a great deal, Hoopheads. Get your Dr. Dish shooting machine today.
Hey, this is Brendan Winters from Pro Skills Basketball, and you are listening to the Hoopheads podcast.
Prepare like the pros with the all-new Fast Draw and Fast Scout. Fast Draw has been the number one play diagramming software for coaches for years. You'll quickly see why Fast Model Sports has the most compelling and intuitive basketball software out there. For a limited time, Fast Model is offering Hoopheads listeners 15% off Fast Draw and Fast Scout. Just use the code HHP15 at checkout to grab your discount, and you'll be on your way to more efficient game prep and improved communication with your team. Fast Model also has new coaching content every week on its blog, plus play and drill diagrams on its playbank. Check out the links in the show notes for more. Fast Model Sports is the best in basketball. Hello and welcome to the Hoopheads podcast. It's Mike Klinzing here with my co-host Jason Sunkel tonight. And we are nearing the end of the regular season. It looks like most of the Eastern Conference was sorted out tonight, at least at the top. So I think the Cavs locked into the four. Knicks are pretty much locked into five. It looks like, although Boston hasn't clinched the two, it looks like Milwaukee is going to for sure be at one, Boston two, Philly three. So we'll talk about that as we get into the matchups. But I think we're going to start with what?
We're going to start with the CBA, Mike. I'm calling an audible. Lems, you told me to surprise you. We're going to start with the CBA, and then we'll do win shares after the CBA.
Perfect.
So, the agreement came out. It was a weird. I was a little concerned, Mike, when I first read that the CBA was agreed upon because it was a weird timing of the whole thing. It was Saturday right before the Right before the Final Four games. I'm like, this seems like a late Friday bad news drop. Like, why are they doing this? Like, are they trying to sweep it under the rug? And I think, I mean, I don't know how your overall feelings are. Based on what I'm reading, I think a lot of what they've come up with, it makes sense. It certainly helps the Cavs for sure in the long run, provided that the directions the Cavs want to go is the way that they can go with it, with Mobley, you know.
All right, well, just explain that provision for people so they understand.
The big thing for the Cavs was there was a provision that I think, I don't know how long that provision has been in place. Was it because of the LeBron Wade Bosch era thing? Is that what happened, or like how?
To be honest, I don't know the origin of when or why, what the logic was behind it. Again, I think it's. Look, whenever restrictions are put in place, it's always owners try to protect themselves from themselves. So,
the restriction was that there could only be two rookie Supermax players on a team, essentially. Like, so the Cavs were going to run into a situation in, I don't know, what, 2 years when Mobley was up for an extension. And they already have Garland on that extension. And they already have Mitchell on that extension. Well, now with the new CBA, there is no restriction anymore. So, the Cavs will not be in that position, which I think as a Cavs fan, and Mike, you're going to agree, not you wouldn't have necessarily agreed when the trade happened, but I think now as a Cavs fan, the future is bright for this to be a long, long, long chance at a championship. Will it yield a championship? Obviously, there's lots of things that have to happen, but I think now, like, just seeing how they're playing together and, you know, obviously Mobley's still not Mobley on offense is still a work in progress. He's got his flashes and whatnot, but I mean Mitchell tonight, fourth straight game of 40 points, and you gotta like Garland, you know, his distributing, like the way he's distributing the basketball and just playing, and he needs to be a little stronger with the ball. I think you'll probably agree with me, especially in those last few possessions. He was, every time he got the ball, I was like, oh, get the ball out of his hands. But I think this provision in the new CBA is going to be helpful for the future of the Cleveland Cavaliers. Mike, do you agree, correct?
Clearly, you want those three guys on the roster. And under the old agreement, it was pretty cloudy as to how the Cavs were going to be able to make that happen. There were lots of rumors that this was going to be included in the CBA. And clearly for the Cavs, it's a win because now you can sign Mobley and then go on your merry way and be able to accommodate Mitchell. And you already have Garland. And now you take care of Mobley and you've got your core locked up. And those guys are going to be a part of this organization, hopefully for a long time. So certainly from a Cavs perspective, that one nugget in the collective bargaining agreement makes a huge difference in the future of that franchise. And then clearly, as you talked about, Mitchell, 40 points again tonight, four straight 40-point games. He's been anything that you could have ever hoped as a Cavs fan. I think it's pretty likely that this is kind of sewing up first-team All-NBA for him, I would guess. And wow, if you can trade for a first-team All-NBA guy, and I know when you look at it, we gave up quite a bit, but I don't think there is anybody, including myself, that would walk that trade back and say, man, we gave up too much, especially considering Mitchell's 26 years old and has seemingly fit in seamlessly, not only on the basketball floor, but just in terms of his personality. And then the other thing you mentioned is Garland. And Garland hasn't played as well in the last 6 weeks. I feel like he's kind of dropped off a little bit. His shooting hasn't been as good. And I feel like his decision-making at the end of games, like you said, sometimes he gets himself into positions where I just don't like some of the things that he's done at the end of games. And we'll see. Hopefully he can right the ship and have a good playoff series against the Knicks. But I've been a little bit worried about his play. I don't feel like he's played as well in the last 6 weeks as he had earlier in the season. So hopefully he can turn around and get ready and get that playoff experience that he needs and that the rest of this team needs, knock off the Knicks, and then be ready to challenge Milwaukee with whatever we can throw at him to try to make it a competitive series. So we'll see. But that's kind of my Cavs thoughts right now, just in a nutshell, as before we dive more into the playoff matchup with the Knicks, which we may or may not talk about anymore tonight, but we certainly will talk about it in the weeks ahead.
Yeah. All right. So then the next big thing that I feel like is relevant to a lot of what we've talked about and what national pundits have talked about is adding a provision that players have to play 65 games to qualify for awards. Now, here's, like, I think this is great, but still that allows players to miss 17 games. So, like, when you're looking at that, I mean, I understand, you know, let's say 82 games, 17 games. I'm the math guy, right? What's the percentage that is? Do you know what the percentage is off the top of your head? I guess so, I could do
70 something.
Well, they can miss 20% of the games, essentially 21% of the games.
So 79, they have to play in 79% of the games.
Yeah.
All right. There you go.
So, like, I feel that's better than not having a restriction in, but is that really going to help people from resting players?
No, like, but here's what I would say is, what you're doing there is you are forcing teams to manage how they load manage, for lack of a better way of saying it. So they know, okay, we can miss 17 games, but we also have injuries that we have to take into account. So if we're going to rest guys and a guy is going to miss 2 weeks because of injury, now suddenly you're getting into a situation where the guy may no longer be eligible for major awards. He may not be eligible for all NBA. And we know that one of the things that is still part of this collective bargaining agreement is that your ability to attain the Supermax is still dependent upon your appearances on the all NBA team. Or there may be other contract incentives that are tied to some of these other major awards. And so this is clearly aimed at the best players. I mean, nobody cares if Dean Wade or Dylan Windler is load managing and is only playing in 60 games in the season. We're talking about the best 25 or 30 players. Those are the only people that people care about in terms of them being able to watch them play when they come to your city, them being a part of big national TV games. We're only talking about 30 guys, 40 guys maybe that anybody cares about and that are actually going to be at some point in their career good enough to be considered for major league-wide awards or all NBA. So I think what you see is that teams are going to have to be strategic and really think about what they're doing in terms of the load management when they mix that with the potential for a player being injured. Because again, if a guy misses a month, he's not going to be able to load manage for the rest of the season if he wants to be eligible for major awards. And so I think that's where you have an impact. We're not going back to the days of superstars playing 82 games. The science isn't going to allow that. And what we now know about the load on these guys and what they have to do, it's not going to go back to the era where guys were playing 80, 81, 82 games year after year after year. For whatever reason, you can argue with it. I can argue with it. It seems like, hey, if you're a basketball player, you want to play in basketball games. But I don't think we're going back to that. And so I think this is a good compromise because at least it forces teams to think about, hey, should we be sitting this guy? Can we be sitting this guy? And it also incentivizes the players to at least play. They have to at least think about, hey, if I get injured, I could suddenly be ineligible for all these awards and that could take away a huge chunk of money out of my pocket. And let's face it, when it comes to any of this stuff, money talks, right? That's ultimately what we're talking about.
For sure. Money does talk. And I agree. I don't know. I saw funny that 70s Sports Wilt Chamberlain. Did you send that to me about load management or did I send that to you?
I've probably seen it. I think I know which about the – yeah, I can't quote it off the top of my head.
We're not going to quote it, but I just think we're going to leave it at that. But yeah. It was a good one. It's a good one.
Will played more than 48 minutes while doing this and this and this and while also off the court doing this. Let's put it that way.
We'll leave it there.
Seems like he was able to manage the loads
fine. Oh God, I'm going to leave it. What a load. All right. I guess
the other piece that we should talk about that I know you're really thrilled to talk about is the in-season tournament. It seems like there are going to be pool play games baked into the schedule. And then it's going to go down to 8 teams. Is that correct? It's going to be 8 teams?
Right.
And now here's my question. Did they say what part of this season this 8-game or the 8 teams thing's going to happen? Like, is this going to happen in let's just say the season starts in late October, okay? You can't have it around Christmas. Or can you?
I could see it ending up around Christmas.
Could the Christmas Day games?
That could be the quarterfinals. I could see that being the quarterfinals.
Could you? That would actually. Okay, I'm changing my tune a little bit here. I'm changing my tune here. I think that's a good play. You take the four best games that are the 8 best teams. You put them in the quarterfinals. Okay, hear me out. So the quarterfinals happens on Christmas Day. Then they get the next day off. Then you play the final four on the 27th, and then the championship on the 29th. Every other day.
Look, I'm fine with it. I think it still comes down to the incentives. And I don't think it was in the article that you and I are looking at, but they had talked about, wasn't it like $550,000 per player and coach? I think was something like that was the prize money. Now, look, that's a lot of money, and it's especially a lot of money for guys.
Okay, hold on. Eight teams advance to a single elimination tournament in December. The Final Four will be held at a neutral site with Las Vegas prominent in the discussion. Each in-season tournament game would count towards regular season standings. Final two finals would ultimately play 83 regular season games. Winning money, players and coaches will be earn additional prize money. And you said I'm lukewarm on this at best. That's what your response was. I thought I saw. Maybe I sent it to you in.
I feel like it was like $500,000, but regardless,
yeah.
What you have to do is you have to get the incentives right so that it means something to the players. Look. If nothing else, it's a regular season game and it counts in the standings. So you're hoping that guys are playing hard no matter what. Is there an extra incentive? Do teams really care if they lose that Final Four game and they don't get to play that extra game in the finals? I don't know. Is that enough money? Is the money amount irrelevant? Does anybody care that you're the in-season tournament champions? Are they eventually going to give some type of competitive advantage to the team that wins the midseason playoff? I don't know. I don't know what's going to happen with any of that. It seems to me that you have to get the incentives right where it means something to the players in order for the general public to get excited about it.
Here's the question. So what would a good incentive? What would be a good incentive for the winner?
I don't really know that there is one, right? I don't personally, I don't think there is one. Other than just you're playing, just like you'd play a regular season game, you're playing because it's your job and you want to win that particular game. I just don't think, is it going to become prestigious? Is it going to mean anything on a player's resume?
Here's what I think. I think they need to come up with an incentive that is tangible. I completely agree with you, but I don't know that they can come up with one that makes a lot of sense. You've got to imagine that most of the teams that are going to be in this, you know, like elite final tournament are probably going to be teams that are going to make the playoffs, right?
You would think.
I mean, but it is early in the season, and I guess like a team like Utah would probably have been in the play-in tournament, or would have been in this, possibly been in the tournament, right?
Right.
And now they're out. So maybe that's not the case. I don't know. I'm just trying to think. Like,
it comes down to right the play. I don't think they can do anything. I mean, I think it has to come down to the players have to. It has to mean something to a player's career, right? The reason why guys want to win titles is because that is what the sport is all about, and that is how ultimately the very best players are judged on how many NBA titles you win and whether or not you're the finals MVP and all these things that go along with that. Now, at some point, does being the midseason tournament MVP add something to your resume? Does winning 6 in-season tournaments, having that on your resume, does that mean something? Maybe 15 years from now, 20 years from now, but does it mean anything to the first 5 years worth of tournament champions? I'm not really sure that it does. And so I'm not saying it's a bad idea, because I think worst case scenario, players just treat it like any other regular season game. And look, we all watch regular season basketball, so we're just going to be watching more regular season basketball, but with a little bit of an added twist of the winner go home, which we don't get to see very often in the NBA. So look, when it's on, you're going to watch it, and I'm going to watch it. I'm just not sure what it actually does for the league in terms of, does it boost interest in those games if you play it on Christmas? Are those games more interesting because they're part of the play-in tournament to the average fan? I don't know. I don't know the answer to that. I just don't think the incentives are going to be in place initially until that means something for a player's legacy. I don't think it's going to matter that much to the players. I don't think the money is big enough to really impact, especially when you're talking about the stars. I mean, maybe the 12th man would like to win $500,000, but LeBron doesn't care if he gets $500,000 for winning the in-season tournament. So I don't know. You got to find the right incentives, and I think those are down the road as it becomes more ingrained sort of in the NBA culture.
Yeah, for sure. I agree. All right. And the last thing I think that we should talk about is the tax implications. And I think you have a better handle about the tax implications. So why don't you explain the tax implications and then...
Sure. So there's a couple different...
I'll talk about it. Go ahead.
Yeah, there's a couple different things in here. So I think when you're looking at it, there's a couple points. So the one we already talked about with being able to sign 3 players to the rookie supermax. So that's one. The second thing, which has been a big topic of conversation over the last month or two, has been the Celtics' ability to re-sign Jaylen Brown. But because he signed a contract that was maybe lower than what his market value was or is currently, there was a 20% limitation on what the Celtics could offer him. So they could only bump him up 20% from his current salary. Well, because Jaylen Brown now is a max player, that 20% bump would not get him up to what he could get on the open market. So therefore, it was really, really difficult for the Celtics to be able to retain him. And certainly, he was going to become an unrestricted free agent at the end of, I believe it's next season, if I'm not mistaken. So what this collective bargaining agreement has done is bump that up to 40% of the player's previous salary, which in the case of Jaylen Brown, makes it that that's going to take him to the point where the Celtics can offer him a max contract. So for most players, that's going to enable them to re-sign with their current team or have the ability that their current team is going to have the ability to offer them a max contract, which I think almost everything that's done in the collective bargaining agreements is done with the idea that players or teams can re-sign their own players. They try to do as much in this collective bargaining agreement, at least from the owner's perspective, to allow teams to re-sign their own stars. So that's kind of what this has done. Now, there is an example in the article that you and I are referencing that DeJounte Murray, who's making $17 million, when he goes to get his extension and you bump that up 40%, that's not going to take him to his max salary. So if you consider DeJounte Murray to be a max player and you're the Atlanta Hawks, you're not going to be able to offer him his max salary. So he may end up going the unrestricted free agent route. And that's not to say that the Hawks couldn't then re-sign him at his max, but they can't offer him an extension early to get him to that max number. So that's just how that 20% bump versus the new 40% bump in the CBA will work. So that's one thing. Then the second part of this is you have teams that when they go over that cap, now you have obviously the luxury tax, and the luxury tax is going to become more punitive, and not just in terms of the dollar for dollar matching of the teams that go over the salary cap, but there's going to be some limitations on what those teams are allowed to do as a result of being over the salary cap. So let's talk about a couple of those things. So one is that those teams are not going to be able to use their mid-level exception. So once you're locked in over the salary cap, there's no exception. You're not going to be able to sign any more mid-level players. They won't be able to do that. And they will also not be able to sign somebody on the buyout market. So when we're speculating here at the February-March buyout deadline and you're seeing, okay, who's going to come available, the teams that have those high payrolls, they're not going to be able to sign any of those players on the buyout market. So those are two impacts of teams that are over the salary cap. They also, when they're trading, they cannot trade and throw cash into the deal, and they can't take back more salary than what they send out in a deal. So basically, they're handcuffing the teams even more so who have gone over the tax. Like I said earlier, a lot of these things in the collective bargaining agreement, not just in this one, but over the years have been the owners trying to protect themselves from themselves is ultimately what ends up happening. So there's a lot of things within this collective bargaining agreement that's really what it does. It's owners protecting other owners from themselves. Yep. So that's what you see. So I don't know if you have any thoughts on that. And there's one other thing that while you're talking, I want to find because I want to just make sure I state it correctly. So I don't know if you have any thoughts on those items that we talked about.
I think the big thing is, Mike, that like you said, this is really this the owners trying to keep their teams intact, players trying to have the ability to make more money. I think everything's a win-win. I really haven't heard any negative things about the overall agreement. Like, I know obviously we've discussed the thought of the in-season tournament being kind of a, I don't know, I don't want to say a farce, but like, is it really going to be garner that much excitement? I don't know. But the big thing is, like, it seems like everyone was pretty happy with this agreement. And I didn't hear any negative. Did you hear any negative from anyone?
I haven't seen a whole lot. I mean, in terms of the activity on social media on NBA Twitter, I haven't seen a lot of criticism. Seems like most people think that what's happened with this CBA has been, the developments are positive for the most part. I haven't heard anybody saying, oh, this is a terrible deal. I haven't heard anybody saying that one side won and the other side lost, which sometimes can be the case. So I think both sides at least are coming out of it thinking that it is a fair agreement. Now, we all know that there's always unintended consequences of things that happen where the intent of what is in there and the language of what's in there is designed to do one thing. And then there's always people whose job it is to try to circumvent the rules that have been put in place and find loopholes and find ways to be able to attack it to the betterment of their own team. So I'm sure there'll be some unintended consequences from this as well. But I'd say the initial reaction has been pretty positive to this CBA. And then the other thing that I didn't mention that as I was scrolling the article that I remembered was that these teams now cannot trade, whereas every other franchise that is below the salary cap can trade future first round picks 7 years out. The teams that are over the cap are limited to only being able to trade a first round pick 6 years into the future. So it just restricts, again, it makes one less first round pick available for those teams to trade.
Did you mention the buyout market too?
Yes, I did. Yeah, so they won't be able to go to the buyout market. So no signing of players from the buyout market if you're over the salary cap.
That makes sense to me. Like,
it does. Yeah, absolutely it does. There's no question. And then I guess the only other thing, well, I guess there's two more things. So you also have the ability of the players now to invest in teams, so they can now purchase shares of NBA or WNBA teams, which there's always been a restriction on that. And players can also, as the NBA and other sports leagues continue to dive deeper and deeper into this connection with sports betting, players can now be sponsored, invest in sports betting companies as well as cannabis companies, provided that those companies are operating legally.
Legal.
Yeah. So, I mean, I don't know, whatever. That the sports betting thing, it'll be interesting to see 5 years from now, 10 years from now, what the impact of that has been on the sports leagues, but also just on people in general. The number of people who are betting on sports, as you can attest to, has jumped
as I can attest to.
Yeah, as you can attest to, your daily quarter bets. What was your bet today?
I picked all the favorites.
De'Aaron Fox with less than 5 turnovers, 7 clutch points, and over 220 dribbles in the game.
I bet a quarter on all the favorites and
didn't play out for you.
Well, I hit on almost all of them, and then Houston decided to be Denver tonight. So
yeah, well, there you go. So anyway, I mean, I think
Anthony Davis just missed 2 free throws in overtime. It's tied 127-127 with the marketing-less Jazz.
All right. Well, hey, if the Lakers don't win that game, I mean, I think everybody had kind of penciled that one in as a win, and then they got the Clippers tomorrow night, and people were talking. There was a lot of podcast and Twitter chatter that, hey, the Lakers can – maybe get all the way to 5. Well, if you lose to Utah tonight, this whole season has been topsy-turvy, man.
The Lakers were up 7 with a minute left, and they went to forced overtime.
Yeah, well, we'll see here. Well, that game will be over in the next 5 or 10 minutes, and we'll be able to talk a little bit about the ramifications of that once we get into talking about the game. So I guess the last thing that I would say about the CBA that's interesting is that the one-and-done rule – for the draft remains. Is still in place. Yeah, still in place. And so there was a lot of talk, I'd say more, not recently, but more like a year or two ago, that they were going to repeal that and we were going to go back to players being able to enter the league directly from high school. But there was a lot of, I think, discussion among the players' union that would have resulted in one double draft where you had the players who had been in college for a year plus the players coming directly from high school, and that could have bumped out guys who currently had jobs. So you're basically accelerating, bringing in 2 sets of young guys instead of 1, where those guys could have lost jobs. And so I think that there was some concern on the union's part that they'd be slashing their own – they'd be hurting their own membership. Now, obviously, those guys who come into the league are going to be part of the membership, but I think that there was a lot of pushback. If there was any real sentiment on the part of the players to allow high school players to jump in and to get rid of the one and done, I think there was some pushback from the players union and the membership that, hey, that's going to cost us jobs. That's going to cost guys who are already in the league jobs. And so I think they backed away from that. So look, the one and done is what it is. And you and I had a conversation today on our collective way home from school about the impact of just of college basketball and watching the Final Four and the championship game last night. And it's just college basketball has lost at the very, very top. It's lost some of its luster because you don't see the games where you have 5, 6, 7 NBA players future NBA players, guys who have been at their schools for 2-3 years that you've gotten to know. Those players just don't exist. Those teams just don't exist. And so it's definitely hurt the sport of college basketball in terms of the interest level of the average fan.
I mean, without going into too many details, I mean, I was way more excited to watch Caitlin Clark play. Like, I don't know. And
she got way more publicity than any single player on the men's side, for sure. I mean, it wasn't even close.
Now, I mean, she did play fantastic. It doesn't hurt.
Like, yeah, her performance was a historic outlier. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, for sure. I mean for sure. And it's just, I was way more like hyped. And I honestly, Mike, how much did the bracket situation play into it? Like, none of those teams were the top teams. Like, I had a 85 bracket. A bracket pool I was in with 85 people, and no one had any of those teams in the Final Four. Like, did that hurt?
It always does. Like, I think it's always a case of where one of the things that's great about the NCAA tournament is the upsets. Everybody loves those first and second round upsets. You love to see Fairleigh Dickinson as a 16 seed win a game. Everybody loves to see that. But nobody loves to see those teams in the Final Four because those are not teams that everybody is following during the season. Their rosters aren't filled with players that everybody knows. You're not familiar. Nobody's watching San Diego State basketball during the season. Nobody's watching Florida Atlantic basketball during the season. It's just from a national perspective, those teams just aren't on anybody's radar. And so when those teams make the Final Four, yeah, it was exciting when they upset teams in the first and second round, but by the time we get to the Final Four, the average college basketball fan wants what we had last year, right? You want to see North Carolina play Duke. You want to see Kansas win the title because those are teams, coaches, players that you're much more likely to be familiar with. And even though North Carolina and Duke and Kentucky, they may not be the teams that I grew up with Jordan and Perkins and Worthy and Matt Doerr, like those teams just don't exist anymore, but it's still the idea of I'm watching North Carolina on my screen versus I'm watching Florida Atlantic, who's in the Final Four for the first time in school history. And kudos to them and kudos to San Diego State. And I know that I've said it numerous times on this podcast, I think it's only a matter of time before a mid-major team wins an NCAA tournament. And it very easily could have been this year if San Diego State had maybe shot the ball better. But look, it's going to happen at some point because the talent level has just evened out and the best teams, the best players, those guys are only there for a year and it's hard to develop continuity. Whereas some of these smaller schools, you have guys who are seniors or you're getting guys out of the transfer portal who are fifth year players. And now all of a sudden you've got this veteran team that's been together for a long time, guys who have a lot of experience, and maybe you're playing against a team that has some younger players. It definitely opens it up where a mid-major is going to break through at some point. Yeah. I mean, we've had multiple mid-majors in championship games over the last 5 or 10 years, whereas prior to that, it was completely unheard of. I mean, you just didn't see that during the glory days of the 80s and 90s of teams that were mid-majors making it to the final game. It just didn't happen. So,
like Kent State was like the one, right?
Like, yeah, I mean, they only made the Elite Eight. You know, they fell one game short of the Final Four. So people are, I think, from a national perspective, people are good with that. But when you get to the Final Four, I think people want to see the Blue Bloods. I mean, that's just the reality of the situation.
Yeah. All right. So anything else on the CBA, Mike?
I think we hit on everything. I mean, again, it hasn't been officially ratified, I don't think, but pretty much everything's been leaked, and I think we covered it fairly well. I'm sure there's some things that we missed, and hopefully we were at least 90% accurate on what we were saying, which I think we were. But yeah, I think
what you're saying is the Cavs are going to be able to sign every NBA All-Star, right? Is that what you were
there
saying?
You go. Like, hey, all we need to be able to do is sign one. If we can sign Mobley and keep Mitchell and Garland, I'm happy with that. That's about all we could ask for.
Yep. All right. So we're going to move to win shares now, a little later in the podcast. We're going to talk Golden State Warriors, Mike.
Okay.
So I've got the win shares for the top five players in Golden State Warrior franchise history.
Okay. Steph Curry.
One.
Draymond Green.
He is 9.
9? Wow. Clay.
Oh, he is 10.
10?
Yeah, so, like, just make sure you understand this is the Rick Philadelphia Barry. Warriors.
Oh, okay, all right.
The San Francisco
okay.
Warriors.
Rick,
and
Rick
the
Barry. Rick Barry.
Rick Barry is 5.
Wilt.
He is 2.
All right, so I have Steph, Wilt, Rick Barry. So that's, I need 3
and 4.
You got
to go way back now. You got to go way back now.
Hal Greer.
Hal Greer is not on the list.
Okay, he must have just been with Philly. Let me think. All right. Nate Thurman.
Nate Thurman. Oh, yeah. He played for the Cavs. He is number 7.
7. Man. Let me think.
One guy made his NBA debut in 1950. And the other guy made his NBA debut in 1951. This second guy is from Chillicothe, Ohio. His nickname is the Old Hoss.
The Old Hoss. Sorry, that doesn't help me.
Or Gabby. He was a center. 5-time All-NBA. He's in the Hall of Fame.
I got nothing.
He shares the first name with the first guy to walk on the moon.
Neil. All right. But that doesn't help me either. So
Neil Johnston. Neil Johnston.
Okay, I got nothing there.
Number 4 and number 3, okay. Paul Arizin.
All right. I at least heard of Paul Arizin. So,
okay, number 6, you would know this guy. I know this guy. 3-point shooter, lefty. I'm pretty sure he's a lefty.
Yeah, Chris Mullin.
There you go. Okay. There you go.
Tim Hardaway.
Tim Hardaway's not, no one else from that team is on the list.
No one else from the Run TMC. No Mitch Richmond.
No one else. No. This other guy is all very old. Jeff Mullins.
Jeff Mullins, really?
Yeah, he's number 8, man. You know that guy? Yeah. You know that name?
He's like from the 80s, right?
No, or Jeff Mullins made his debut in the 64. His nickname was Pork Chop.
All right, I'm thinking of a different guy then. All right.
So he was number, he's number 8. And then number 11 is a guy named Tom Gola.
That's old school.
And number 12 is Purvis Short.
Purvis Short. Nice. Big time scorer. Purvis Short kind of had the, he had a weird shooting motion kind of from behind his head, but he was a big time scorer, kind of a one dimensional guy.
He's almost the original LeBron because his positions on Basketball Reference says small forward, shooting guard, power forwarder, center.
All right. Well, there you go. Purvis was everywhere. Nice.
So there you go. There's a top 12 Golden State Warriors.
I like it.
Your first impression is everything when applying for a new coaching job. A professional coaching portfolio is the tool that highlights your coaching achievements and philosophies, and most of all, helps separate you and your abilities from the other applicants. The Coaching Portfolio Guide is an instructional membership-based website that helps you develop a personalized portfolio. Each section of the Portfolio Guide provides detailed instructions on how to organize your portfolio in a professional manner. The guide also provides sample documents for each section of your portfolio that you can copy, modify, and add to your personal portfolio. As a Hoopheads Pod listener, you can get your Coaching Portfolio Guide for just $25. Visit coachingportfolioguide.com/hoopheads to learn more.
Lakers won, dude.
You know, 135-133. LeBron, 37 points, 5 rebounds, 6 assists. Fishing 14 of 27 from the field.
LeBron's ready, man.
All right. So I guess let's go to the Western Conference, Mike, because who the hell knows what's going to happen there at this point. We have, like you said, I think the East is pretty much solidified. We'll talk East play-in situation, but I think pretty much everything's almost locked up there. Like, you know, there's a few small details to work out, but seemingly the top 3 seeds are locked, and then And we're locked into four. We can't go below four. We got the home court advantage and all that stuff. So I think it makes sense to talk Western Conference. Now, we'll look at this and we'll look at what the records are. Now, I'm guessing NBA.com is not going to have the most accurate. Our NBA app is not normally up to date right away with the results of the game. So we might have to, you might have a little better.
Yeah, I got the ESPN standings pulled up. So those are usually when you refresh the page.
What does it say the Lakers are now?
So Lakers 40 and 39, won three in a row.
Well, see, 40 and 39. According to NBA.com, they're 40 and 38.
40 and 38, sorry, 40 and 38.
So that,
sorry.
So did that count the game? The question is, does that count the game tonight? No, it does not include. It does not include the game tonight. They're 41-38. So I'm looking at the scores. So they're going to go up to 41-38, which means they have the same record as the Golden State Warriors,
who are losing to the Thunder right now. At home, by the way, 4 minutes to go.
So that would mean, Mike, that tomorrow's game with the Clippers, whoever wins that game is going to be in the five spot after that game if Golden State loses.
Yeah.
Holy macaron.
So you'd have a Phoenix. You potentially are looking at a Phoenix, Lakers.
Oh, LeBron Durant. NBA wants that so bad. Don't tell me they don't. I mean, come on.
But honestly, any of those series. I mean, if Phoenix is going to be the four, which that I think is pretty much guaranteed, they're beating San Antonio tonight. So they're going to be at that
they're
point.
They're going to be locked in. They're locked in after that.
They're going to be three games up, which I don't think, unless somebody has a tiebreaker over them and Phoenix were to lose all their remaining games and the other team would win all their remaining games, which seems highly unlikely. So let's just put Phoenix in there. I think any of those series, Phoenix Clippers, Phoenix Warriors, Phoenix Lakers, any one of those series would probably be the best first round series, or at least the most theoretically interesting first round series in the whole league, right?
I mean,
any one of those three.
I mean, I would think so, but I mean, who's saying that if somehow the Lakers are in the play-in and they get to play Denver in the first round, I sure would sign up for that. Wouldn't you sign up for a Lakers-Denver first round?
Yeah, that would be a fun look. That's going to be a fun series. Whoever the Lakers play, wherever they end up, it's going to be a fun, interesting series.
Listen, Mike, we scoff at the Lakers, okay? We've scoffed a lot. But, like, if LeBron and AD are healthy, that's a tough out. Like, that's going to be a tough out
to beat
them. I know,
man. They can take out the Jazz without Markkanen with those two guys playing together. So, yeah, well, I mean, they could beat anybody. Right,
I'm just telling you, theoretically,
those two guys played tonight, right?
And the Cavs won by four tonight in Orlando and played like garbage in most of the game.
Look, I get it. I'm just saying I think the Lakers, look, the idealized version of AD and LeBron, yeah, can they win a game? Could they win a series? Maybe, probably. I don't know. At this point, I don't trust those two guys to stay healthy. They haven't really been able to. Look, I guess the counter argument to what I'm saying is that none of these teams have been able to sustain anything over the course of the regular season with any type of consistency whatsoever. Once you get past Denver, Memphis, and Sacramento, and clearly all three of those teams, people feel have flaws that could be fatal to them in the playoffs. But from Phoenix on down, any of those other teams have had moments where they looked like they could beat anybody and had moments where they looked like they may never win another game again. And so the Lakers definitely fall into that category where you catch them on the right night, and sure, they look like they could probably be a title contender, but you catch them on other nights and it looks completely the opposite. Like, how's this team ever going to win a game? So I think whoever the Lakers play, it's going to be compelling just because of who LeBron and AD are, especially who LeBron is in the history and the context of the league. And betting against LeBron, especially early in the playoffs, has never been a good decision. So I think people would feel like it wouldn't be a good decision to bet against them no matter who they're playing in the first round of the playoffs. But I don't think that by any means that that team is a team that – look, I guess you could say you'd be afraid because of the high end of those two guys, but I'm not so sure I'd be super afraid of the Los Angeles Lakers. I guess okay. Here's how I would frame it. If you were the Cavs, which of those three teams would you rather play? The Clippers, the Warriors, or the Lakers? If you had to choose, if you were in the Western Conference with this Cavs team playing the versions of these teams.
I would want to play the Lakers.
Right, I agree. I mean, I think you'd want to play the Lakers. And then I guess if the Clippers are compromised and Paul George is still out, you'd probably want to play the Clippers, and then you'd probably least likely to play the Warriors. And yet the Warriors can't win a road game, and so the Cavs or anybody else is going to have home court advantage against them. And look, they might lose tonight too. I guess that was the third quarter, so there's still more. There's still a whole quarter to go in that Oklahoma City Golden State game. So Oklahoma City's up.
There's lots of defense being played in that game.
Yes, there is. It's already 106-102, so who knows what's going to happen by the time. We'll probably be done by the time that game's over. But
yeah,
nonetheless, I think Golden State, Wiggins, I think, made an announcement today that it shouldn't be too much longer that he's going to be back, and clearly he's an important part of whatever they're going to do to try to defend their title. But it's hard to believe that with their road record and just the way they've played on the road that they're going to win and go on the road for – three straight playoff series against quality opponents and be able to win three straight series. I don't see it. Their pedigree says of their individual players says that they're capable of doing that. But this season's track record says that that's a complete pipe dream, that's not going to happen.
Yeah.
So I kind of hope we get Phoenix and the Lakers. I think that would be fun. I think that would be a fun series to see LeBron go against Durant. And both of those teams are kind of in flux in that they haven't really had a lot of time to play together. Durant because of the injury, the Lakers because of the trade, D'Angelo Russell's been out, LeBron's been out. There's just a whole – that would be sort of two teams not only trying to feel out their opponent but trying to feel out themselves in the course of a playoff series, and I think that would make for a compelling series to watch for sure.
Perfect. All right. Let's talk. Like, who do you think, what is it going to end up being? So, like, Denver, although, have they locked it? Denver hasn't locked it technically, right? I mean, losing tonight, I mean, they're only two games out and they're two games up and they have three to play. So, still. So,
yeah, I think if they lost every game and the Grizzlies won their last three, then the Grizzlies would end up at 53-29, and the Nuggets would end up at 52-30. So it's still possible. Doesn't seem likely that that would happen, but Denver loses to Houston tonight. That seems like a game that maybe you just go for if you're Denver and just wrap things up, and then you can coast. Now you kind of have to win one of your last three, which clearly you should be capable of doing, but I'm not so sure.
They play back to back the last two game days of the season. And it's against the Jazz and the Kings.
Kings are going to be locked in most likely. I mean, I guess they could still same way and, that Memphis and they could might, catch
and they
Denver.
Might, they might pitch that game intentionally, Mike. Here we go. The Sacramento Kings playing Denver. If Denver loses, Memphis wins, then Memphis jumps Denver, and then Sacramento potentially has to play Denver in the second round. They're pitching that game. They're not going to say it if it comes down to it. They're not going to say, oh, we're going to try to lose this game. They're pitching this game.
Sacramento, you clearly want to play Memphis in the second round, I would think. Although maybe you don't. Maybe you say, hey, Memphis has a much better defense than Denver does, and we're an offensive team. We feel like our offense is better than Denver's offense, and since neither team's really going to play a whole lot of defense, maybe we just think we can outscore Denver, and we'd rather not get down in the muck with Memphis. You could see that.
Yeah.
I could see it.
So here, who do you think's going to be in the play? Like, what's the play-in going to be in the West, Mike? Do you want to?
Dallas is out. Dallas is out, right? I mean, Dallas is out.
God,
I
think they're terrible. They're god awful.
I just don't see them. They got to win three in a row to get to 40-42. And I think if Oklahoma City wins this game tonight, that it's pretty much a lock. I think it's pretty much over at that point.
Yep.
If Oklahoma City loses tonight, that keeps the door open for Dallas. But Dallas has all the ramifications of that top 10 protected pick where they could potentially, if they get into the top 10, they could keep it. Who knows? Maybe you get lucky and you get the Cavs 0.2% chance of getting Kyrie Irving and somehow you end up with Wembanyama.
Oh, you got Kyrie Irving though already.
I know, but you know what I'm saying. The odds of getting Wemby are pretty small, but you have a lot better odds if you're in the ping pong balls than if you're losing in the first 9-10 playoff game. So I don't know. I got to believe Dallas is out. So I think you're looking at the way it sits now. I think Minnesota, Oklahoma City, 9-10. I think the way – and then I think New Orleans is probably going to stay in the eighth spot. And then whatever one of these teams of the Clippers, Lakers, and Warriors – I don't know.
But I don't like the way they're doing this the play-in tournament this year. And maybe they did it this way last year. They're doing – the 7-8 games on the same day. They're doing the 9-10 games on the next day. And then that means that the 7-8 loser gets an extra day off.
That's good. I like it. They should get an advantage, right?
Yeah, I guess.
I think they should get an advantage.
Okay.
Look, I just hope what would be awesome, and I know you're going to laugh and so am I, but if somehow Zion were able to come back for New Orleans.
Has anyone said anything about him coming back? I know you said someone said something last week, but have you heard his name come up at all in any of the podcasts?
Not in any real way. Like his return is imminent. More just like the same thing I just said. Man, if Zion could come back, it would be super interesting. Look, I think the Pelicans are better than their stretch of games where they were just abjectly horrible. I mean, I think it took them a while to get back when Ingram returned from his injury to kind of get their footing and figure out, again, how they wanted to play. And they've obviously been better over the last 10 or 15 games. Okay,
so Shams reported this 13 hours ago. There's still no timetable for Zion's return. He's going to be reevaluated later this week. He did participate in some low-intensity 3-on-3 over the weekend. He's not coming back.
He's ready, man. He's back. He's back. He's
low back. Intensity 3-on-3. Was he have three plates of food in front of him? Like, come on, man.
He only needs low intensity. All you need is low intensity Zion. I'm down for if low intensity Zion wants to play. That's what we're going to start calling him right now on this podcast from now on. Low intensity Zion. When's low intensity Zion coming back? I like it.
So I think that Dallas is out. I think here's Golden State is, depending on when Wiggins returns, I mean, I guess here's what I want to say.
Whichever one of those three teams is going to, the Clippers, Lakers, or Warriors, whichever one of those teams ends up in the 7 spot, it's going to be one of those three teams, I would think.
Yeah. So
whichever one ends up in the 7, I think we both think are going to advance in the play-in tournament, right? Whichever one of those teams gets in is not going to lose two play-in games.
Well, yeah, let's look at their schedule. So obviously the Lakers Clippers are tomorrow night. Okay. Lakers Clippers tomorrow night.
Yep.
Then on Thursday, none of those teams play. Then on Friday, we have the Lakers play the Suns. The Warriors play the Kings. And the Clippers are still off. Okay. And then the next day, the Clippers have the Trailblazers on Saturday.
It's a win.
Well, Saturday's schedule's weird. Why are there three games? They have three games. What's going on Saturday, April 8th, that they have three games on Saturday in the NBA, and one's at 3:30 and the other two are at 4 o'clock?
The Masters?
Or is it because Sunday every team's playing.
Yeah.
I guess that's probably why, because they're trying to make it competitively balanced. I don't know. And then all the Western Conference games are happening on the last day, and the Lakers play the Jazz again. The Clippers play the Suns, and the Warriors play the Blazers. And the Blazers could really play spoiler here, but I don't see it happening. And
Phoenix may or may not play anybody in that game because they're going to be pretty much locked into the four spot. So maybe they're incentivized.
Maybe they want to. Maybe they don't, though. Maybe they want to play people so that they don't play the Clippers in the first
round. That's what I'm saying. Or maybe you want to play the Clippers. Do you want to beat the Clippers so that the Clippers are not the five? Or do you want to lose to the Clippers so the Clippers are the five?
Right? If I'm the Suns, I probably want to play the Clippers out of the three of those, like, because I don't want anything to do with LeBron. I know what we just said. I just said the Cavs.
I don't know. Durant's a crazy man, though, so maybe he says we want LeBron. I don't know. I don't know.
There's just good storylines in every one of those series. Yeah. You have Durant versus the Warriors is obviously interesting. You have Durant versus LeBron, which is obviously interesting. You have the Clippers and just their whole saga and whether or not Paul George is going to come back and just the tortured history of that franchise. And I think that, look, that's going to be that series is going to be interesting. It's going to be compelling, just like we said off the top. I think whichever team ends up in that five hole playing Phoenix, that's going to be a knockdown, drag out series between two teams that a lot of people would probably argue can win the Western Conference. I don't think really the Lakers can, to be honest. I'm not sure Golden State can either. The Clippers compromised. I'm not sure they can, but there's a lot of people that think those teams can win the Western Conference. And so that's going to be a matchup of two theoretically powerhouse teams. And then I think, like I said, whichever one of those teams ends up in the seven is going to end up taking the seven seed, I would think. And then it's a question of which team out of New Orleans, Minnesota, Oklahoma City do we think is going to advance and grab the eighth spot? Which one of those teams you like the most?
Probably Minnesota. I don't know how you feel on that, but
I kind of feel like, man, like each of those teams has something to sell. I mean, each of those teams has some interesting stuff that would make you think that maybe they could get through and maybe they could be the team that would make it. I for some reason, I keep coming back to Oklahoma City. I don't know why. I don't know that I have any logical reason why I think that they'd be the team that would make it through, but I just keep coming back to, I feel like Shea is the best player on those three teams. And so often the best player is the guy that helps his team to advance. So I'm going to go with Oklahoma City as my eighth seed in the Western Conference, which never would have thought.
You're a crazy man, Mike.
Well, we'll see. We'll see. East, you want to touch the East real quick, and then we'll wrap it up?
Yeah, we can talk to East. Okay, so like we said before, the top seeds are in. The play-ins are set. So the top five seeds are done, Mike. They're clinched. Okay.
Yep.
And Toronto and Chicago are the play-ins. So it's really down to Brooklyn, Miami, and Atlanta. I think Atlanta we can pretty much mark in the play-in. They're in the play-in.
Yep.
So it's really down to Brooklyn and Miami as far as who's going to be in that sixth spot. So let's just look at their schedules now, Mike. How's that sound?
Okay. Sure.
So tomorrow, if my app loads, tomorrow Brooklyn has to play again, but they're playing Detroit.
Gotta think they're going to win that game.
Yeah, I would think so. Okay. Then Thursday, Miami is at the 76ers. Now, the 76ers are playing for the 2 seed. Okay, so they're still in it. That's important for them still.
They're going to play that game out.
Yep. Okay, then on Friday, Brooklyn is home against Orlando. Miami is off. Saturday, no one's playing. And then Sunday, Brooklyn plays Philadelphia, which could still mean something. And Miami is home against Orlando. This is like all the same teams are playing against these teams. It's pretty hilarious.
So right now in the standings, Brooklyn is one game up on the in the loss column. So if you look at the two schedules, Brooklyn is going to play Detroit, Orlando, Philadelphia. I got to think they're going to win. They're going to go 2-1. So they're going to have one more loss, which puts them right now even with Miami, which means Miami would have to go undefeated at Philly, at Washington, home against Orlando. I got to think they're going to lose at Philly, which to me ends it and puts Brooklyn in the sixth seed. So I'm going to say, I'm going to say Brooklyn stays in the sixth based on the schedule.
I agree. I don't see it. I don't see any way.
So then who's your two teams that advance out of the play-in? I'm guessing you're going to have the same two teams as me.
Miami and Chicago.
Really? No, I don't have Chicago. I'm going with Toronto.
Listen, Simmons talked me into it in his podcast.
All right. So we're both out on Atlanta.
Yeah.
I just don't want Atlanta to play the Cavs. Atlanta looks like world champions every time they play the Cavs. I'm deathly afraid of that team for some reason. I don't know what the matchups are or why, but I feel like Atlanta always plays their best against us. So, but I think Toronto and Miami are the two teams that get out. So that would put Miami playing the Celtics, which would be fun. That would be a tasty first round series. Now Boston could kill him, but at least the idea and the history of those two teams leads you to think that that could be a competitive series. Toronto, Milwaukee, I guess you could say the one good thing about that matchup that could theoretically make it competitive is that Toronto has some long defending. You know, they could throw a lot of guys at Giannis. You can throw Scottie Barnes at him. You can throw Siakam at him. You can throw OG Anunoby at him. They got a lot of different guys, at least that they can theoretically put up against Milwaukee. I don't think it's going to make any difference. Maybe Milwaukee drops a game in that series, but the series in the East are not going to be nearly as compelling, I don't think, as the Western. Philadelphia, Brooklyn, if that's a series, that series is not very compelling. I don't think Milwaukee against whoever they play. Cavs and Knicks will be a good series. And then Boston and Miami, at least theoretically, is going to have some interest. But whether that ends up being competitive, I'm not 100% sure. Whereas in the West, I think you have the potential for a lot of different things and weird outcomes, and you could see some series that you might have thought, hey, that could be a 7-game series. Maybe one team sweeps the other one. I think it's going to be completely unpredictable what happens in the West, whereas I expect the East to kind of go chalk. I mean, I would be very surprised if the conference semifinals in the East aren't the top 4 seeds.
I agree. I'm excited for it because that includes our Cleveland Cavaliers.
Correct.
And it would be really good. And then we can shock the world, Mike.
Hey, look, it'd be awesome to get through the Knicks and get an opportunity to play against Milwaukee and just see what you got. And who knows? Maybe it becomes Evan Mobley's coming out party and Mitchell has a series where he averages 39 a game and crazier things have happened. So you can only give yourself a chance if you get there. So hopefully they can take care of business with the Knicks and then we'll see what happens from there. So regular season is almost over. Anything else? We don't really need to talk about MVP or anything like that. Let's wait till the end of the season, see what happens. I think Embiid putting up 52 tonight against Boston definitely helped his cause. I don't think anything that's happened over the last month, to be honest with you, changes your mind. If you were a Giannis guy, I think you can still make a case for Giannis. Same thing with Embiid, same thing with Jokic. I think everybody's kind of dug in and we'll see. I think it's going to be a really close vote, so we'll see what happens.
All right, I agree.
Cool. All right, let's leave it there. Thanks for checking us out tonight on this NBA episode of the Hoopheads Pod, and we will catch you on our next episode. Thanks.
Thanks for listening to the Hoopheads Podcast, presented by Head Start Basketball.